Spurs fans are really relentless. LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Thursday's three games, including a huge Rockets comeback to beat the Warriors. We're going to preview the 10 games for Friday. We're going to talk about a trade in the NBA for those of you listening on audio. Those of you watching the video, there's a separate video there for that trade that went down today as well. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it indeed.
We will start where we always do.
Monstrous line of the night.
Yes, it's time for the monstrous line of the night. I'm sure you've got no idea who it is. It is Jim Harden of the Houston Rockets. Just ludicrous, the stuff that he is doing at the moment. Another 40-point triple-double, 44 points in 44 minutes. He actually had a fantasy quadruple-double because he had 10 threes, 10 rebounds, 15 assists. He had a steal and two blocks. He was 13 of 32 from the field and 8 of 9 from the free throw line. This is the number one player in fantasy for the entire season. Just putting up consistently absurd numbers, averaging 33 points a game with 6 rebounds at 8.5 assists, over 2 steals on 44 and 85%. These numbers are out of control. 39% usage, in fact 41% usage over the last month on a true shooting of 64% is insanity. His last 13 games have yielded 38 points per game with 8 assists. These numbers are crazy. This is 4 consecutive 40-point games. The game before that, those 4 games was a 39-point game. He had a 50-point triple-double about a month ago. These numbers from Harden are ludicrous. He slipped in some drafts. I have no idea why. He's back at number one over Anthony Davis now. These numbers are literally insane. And for him to drag the Rockets back to victory in this game over the Golden State Warriors, considering his team was starting Daniel House and Austin Rivers, is dead set insane. On the road as well, and the Rockets struggled to begin this season, no doubt. But Harden is playing at a level that we really haven't seen all that often before, at least in recent NBA history. Just absolute nonsense stuff. And if you have him on your fantasy team, you're loving it because these numbers are, they're out of control. And I don't know how many more good things I can say about what James Harden is doing.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bryn Forbes of the San Antonio Spurs. 29 minutes for Forbes in the blowout victory by the Spurs over the Raptors. 20 points with 6 triples, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal on very good shooting, 7 of 10 from the field. Now, I've been relatively critical of Forbes this season, but what I have said of late is he's settled into a 30-minute-a-night role, which is consistent, which is good, and he's providing some decent numbers. On the year, he is outside the top 150 because he offers very little outside of 3-pointers, but over the last 2 weeks, Forbes has upped his playing time. He's upped his percentages as well, shooting 52% from the field, including 50% from 3 and 54% from 2. So there is an element of regression coming, but the other impressive thing of what Forbes has done is got his assists up to 3.6 per game over the last 7 games. Now, I don't think that he is a must-add player because this level of shooting is not able to stick. 52 and 50 from the field and from 3 are numbers that nobody can do. But for the time being, while Forbes is getting you 14 points a night and hitting 3 triples a night and doing it efficiently, there's absolute value there. Now, he gets the line literally never. 1 free throw attempt per game in 28 minutes a night is ridiculously low. He shoots the ball well, but just doesn't get there. And it's really this increased field goal percentage and 3-point percentage that's providing any sort of fantasy value. He probably more suits as a 14-team must-add player. But at the moment, the short-term value for him in 12-team value is there in that short term, but it is really, really buoyed by that increase in efficiency, which I think will dip off to a degree. He's shooting obviously really, really strong last year, but this is a guy that shot 42% last season and 36% in his rookie season. So it is a big step forward to expect him to continue on this last 7-game pace of 52% from the field. So there will be some drop-off coming from Forbesy, but he's established himself as a shooting guard because he's not a point guard. And that's part of what my criticism was of him at the start of the season. He is not an NBA-caliber point guard, and he's not because he's a shooting guard and he's fitting into this role significantly better, getting better looks with Derek White playing next to him, and that is helping him out a lot. And I think we can't discount that fact that he's playing a more natural position now, getting more assisted looks rather than unassisted or having to create for himself and others. It's working more in his favor and the shots are falling at a significantly increased level. The deep leaguer of the night is from the same game. It's Norman Powell of the Toronto Raptors. Powell played 25 minutes and had 14 points. He added 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And as I've said over the last week or so, he has pushed himself back into the rotation. He's taken CJ Miles out of there. And the last 3 games, Powell has played at least 20 minutes in all of those games. And in fact, since he returned from injury, he has played over 20 minutes in 5 of the 7 games. And one of the games he didn't was his first game back, where he played just 15 minutes. He has scored in double figures 4 of those 7 games since he's returned as well. He's generated steals in 4 of the 7 games. He's had 3 blocks in each of his last 2 games. He's putting up numbers that make you think he should be rostered in more than the 1% of leagues that he is rostered on Yahoo. Since he's come back, he's ranked 156th. So everyone in 16-team leagues, you've got to be looking at Norman Powell. Now, Kyle Lowry returning does have an impact. They play different positions, sure, but it means DeLon Wright moves from being a backup point guard over to being a backup 2 and 3, and that takes some of those minutes away from Norman Powell. So the 22, 23 minutes a night that he's getting at the moment, it's not going to stick. He's probably going to push back to 19 or 20, but still, he needs to be rostered in more than 1% of leagues because he's scoring at a pretty solid rate. He's hitting threes okay. He's scoring okay. He's hitting threes at a terrible rate. That should improve. Just 26% over the last 7 games from 3. He's getting steals. The blocks aren't too bad as well. So he's putting up some okay numbers, but I don't think we look at Powell as anything more than that, 16 to 18 team league guy. But still, the fact that he's available in 99% of leagues means that some of those deeper leagues need to pay a little bit more attention to what Norm Powell is doing. Let's go on to the next one.
Young Gun of the Night.
It's Daniel House of the Houston Rockets. House was really strong in this game. He played 39 minutes in the overtime victory, 17 points with 2 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists and a steal, and took just 5 field goal attempts. He was 3 of 5 from the field, and amazingly, 9 of 9 from the free throw line. Over the last 2 weeks, House is a top 100 fantasy player. Yes, because he is shooting 58% from the field, including 52% from 3 and 69% from the 2-point land.
Giggity!
That, of course, has zero chance of sticking. He was a 26% 3-point shooter last season, 37 on the year this year, but this extremely elevated 2-point percentage from Daniel House is just not going to be able to stick. But I do think with how well he is playing, and he had a nice little cameo last season for the Phoenix Suns as well, and I don't know really why they waived him, he has a real chance to stick in this rotation ahead of James Ennis, who hasn't really set the world on fire. Yes, before Ennis's injury, Eric Gordon was starting at small forward anyway. And of course, Gordon and Paul and Ennis have to ramp back up, and that's all going to cut into what House is doing. But it's a surprising thing to see him inside the top 200 over the last 2 weeks. But strictly, that's on the back of 88% from the line and 58% from the field. Nothing else there is a real positive. So it is quite misleading. Those numbers won't stick from House, but he is available in 95% of leagues. So if you want to grab him in an 18-team league, a 16-team league, I think it's worth at least considering with how well he is playing at the moment. And the unlikelihood of that level of conversion sticking is pretty obvious that he's not going to be able to do that at the same level that he's been doing it for the course of this season. But still, there is value there in House a little bit more than what we might have expected from him, and he's definitely playing himself into a situation where he gets that two-way contract converted into a full-time one. So strong performances from Daniel House. I tell a man's not hot. A little bit harsh for the dud of the night, but it's going to Gary Harris. Remember, when I'm giving the dud of the night, it's the worst performer out of players who are rostered in 70% or more of Yahoo leagues. Harris coming back from his injury, and normally for guys coming back from his injury on a minutes restriction, I'll give them a break on this, but he still played 31 minutes, had 14 points, but just really empty across the board. 14 points, 2 triples, 3 rebounds, no other stats there, 4 of 10 from the field. Nothing to worry about here with Gazza. I'll just play this for the sake of it.
Nice, Gary!
Nothing to really be too concerned about, but good to see that the 31 minutes were there. He should be back starting next game and playing his usual 32 to 35 minute role. And yeah, it's not a bad night from him. It just was the worst of all of the highly rostered players. And that gives him the dud of the night, but absolutely nothing to really be concerned about. And actually great to see him play 31 minutes in his second game back from injury. The plus-minus goats of the night, Juancho Hernangómez of the Denver Nuggets, was a plus 104.8. That's why it's even more curious that he played only 16 minutes and didn't get a single foul during that time. You get the feeling that he and Monty Morris, their time is pretty close to being over. While the worst net rating of the night went to Danny Green, negative 121.5, hashtag revenge game for Green. The Raptors obviously got their ass kicked by the Spurs, and Green was putrid, going scoreless and missing all seven of his shots. Injury news, Markieff Morris is out for at least 6 weeks with that neck injury. This is what we were waiting for to really solidify Thomas Bryant. You needed to grab Bryant anyway, but now we feel he's going to get a solid run, at least until Markieff comes back. And honestly, if Markieff comes back, this neck is a real issue, and this might actually linger on longer than that. We've seen big minutes from Bryant in any game that Markieff has missed. Now, when Otto Porter gets his minutes bumped back up, maybe Jeff Green can come in and take some of those Morris minutes, maybe putting a little bit of a ceiling on Thomas Bryant. But the bigger beneficiary is going to be Bryant from this injury. And Green, to a degree, could actually be able to maintain back-end 12-team league value. He's got 12-team league value at the moment, Jeff Green, because of the Porter injury. And with now Morris going out, in addition to Howard being out, Green could maintain that level. So if you've got him, you probably just want to hold to see exactly how that all goes down in that situation. Mike Conley dealing with a shoulder issue. He's questionable for Friday's game. That was the reason for his piss poor performance on Wednesday. Obviously something to monitor. If he is out, Javon Carter and Shelvin Mack will get that extra bump there, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a long-term thing. While Kevin Love has been cleared to resume select basketball activities, there is still no timeline in his return. I would guess around the 20th-ish, around of January for him to return. But we just don't know at this point when Love is going to be back. So I think we're probably 3 weeks away from Kevin being able to return if he's just starting some basketball activities at the moment, and not all basketball activities. So it's a long way from contact returning from that that foot issue that had bothered him this season. Of course, there was a trade that went down. I recorded a video earlier on about my thoughts on the Justin Holiday trade. So if those of you listening on audio, you're going to get to hear those thoughts now. Otherwise, we move on to the next segment of the show. So we had a trade go down today in the NBA with Justin Holiday being dealt from the Chicago Bulls to the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm just going to give you an immediate thought, immediate reaction on this deal and what potentially happens to the value of these players involved in the deal. To get through the details of it, the Memphis Grizzlies get Justin Holiday, the starting small forward from the Chicago Bulls, and in exchange, they give up Wayne Selden, they give up Marshawn Brooks, and two second-round picks, the 2019-2020 second-round picks, which are both unprotected as far as I can ascertain at this point. So the big question is here, what does this do for these players' overall value? Let's start with what happens here with Justin Holiday. He so far is the 65th ranked player over the course of the season, but over the last month, that value has dropped 111th over the last month, despite playing 34 minutes a game. And that's because he's shooting just 34% from the field. He comes in with his reputation as a knockdown shooter. He's not that good of a shooter, 36% from three on the season, 30% over the last month. And those numbers, the 1.8 steals, it's coming in 34 minutes a game. Heading to Memphis, if finding 34 minutes a game for him, I don't think it's going to happen. Yes, Brooks and Selden go out of the rotation, but let's be honest, they were playing 6 minutes a game combined. Brooks wasn't playing, and Selden was playing a handful of minutes. So Holiday comes in, he takes those 6 minutes, we get that. And then Garrett Temple is the one starting at shooting guard. There's Shelvin Mack in there who'd been playing some shooting guard minutes. So we can eliminate all of Shelvin Mack's shooting guard minutes pretty much, and he plays primarily or exclusively as the backup at behind Mike Conley at point guard. So that gives Holiday some minutes there. Either replace us. I think Garrett Temple loses some minutes, but they love what Temple does as a defensive player. You could argue that Temple is a better defender than what Holiday is. He's probably a bigger body than what Holiday is as well. And then you got Kyle Anderson at the three. So I think Holiday comes in, and I can't see any scenario in which Justin Holiday is playing 34 minutes a night for the Memphis Grizzlies. At this point, and you can check all this out over on Basketball Monster, I've got him projected at about 28 minutes a night. That even might be just a little bit too high for Justin Holiday moving forward here. Maybe it's 27 a night. But he could easily take the Garrett Temple role and play 30 minutes, and they drop Temple down to 20. But regardless, it's not 34 minutes a night. It's not 35 minutes a night. The Bulls were playing pretty slow, but they're not playing as slow as the Grizzlies. So we're talking 3 or 4 possessions a night fewer per game that the Grizzlies do play versus what happens in Chicago. So that's some extra possessions that go away. Now, I can see the usage perhaps rising a little bit. The Bulls had Levine and Dunn and Markkanen, and then Portis was going to return, and there's a bit of a chucking in some of those guys and the way they play. The Grizzlies have Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. So there is an opportunity there for Holiday, especially if he does come off the bench, to maybe get some more shots. But maybe that's not a good thing for what Justin Holiday does, given the fact that he is shooting so poorly. He could be a larger negative in that field goal percentage category. So that, I think, is a concern there. So in any 10-team league, I think Holiday is a clear drop, and I think he probably is a 12-team league drop as well. But it's not a situation where you're dropping someone for the sake of dropping them. Have a look who you're picking up. But I think that Holiday's run as that must-roster guy is pretty much cooked. It was already trending a little bit that way anyway, with those numbers really, really dropping off over the last month. It still was holding him. Now I think we're looking at him as someone who is not a must-roster guy in those 12-team formats any longer. The rest of Memphis, again, all this is updated over on Basketball Monster. I don't think a huge amount changes. I think Garrett Temple loses value. I don't think he's going to be playing 30, 31 minutes a night. He was really just a 16 to 18 team league guy before, and now he moves into the 20 team type of category. You're going to have maybe a few less minutes for someone like Dylan Brooks. He wasn't really touching the sides of many fantasy leagues anyway, so he loses maybe a couple of minutes off his upside. Perhaps Omri Caspi falls out of the rotation as we have Justin Holiday to play some of those minutes at the three, and the Grizzlies were definitely lacking some backups there at the small forward position for Kyle Anderson. I don't think it impacts Gasol or Anderson or Conley or Jaren Jackson Jr. Holiday is clearly inferior to all of those guys. He takes some minutes off Garrett Temple, but I think that that run of him being a 12-team league guy is pretty much cooked at the moment. Again, we'll see how this all plays out. Both Memphis and Chicago play on Friday. I don't imagine any of these traded players to actually take part in that game, so we won't get a full grasp of that. But the Grizzlies do play again on Saturday, and Holiday may be available for that game. But expecting what he was doing, 35 a night, 11.5 points, 1.7 steals, 2.6 triples on 7 attempts per game for a Grizzlies team which wasn't as 3-point happy as Chicago, and even since Boylan took over, Holiday was taking fewer threes, only 5 per game over his last 6 games, and the shooting had dropped right off. So he's one of those guys who needs to bludgeon his way into value by getting 35 a night, and I think the likelihood of him getting 35 a night in Memphis is significantly lower, and yeah, pretty close to impossible versus what we saw in Chicago. Now, you might think Garrett Temple's not that good, and I agree with you. I don't think he is that good. Also, I think Justin Holiday is not that good. And you could easily make the argument that Holiday comes in and starts at shooting guard. That's fair enough. I just don't think that he's getting 35 a night. He might get 30 a night. I definitely don't see him improving on what he was doing. And there is a little bit more competition when he had literally nobody competing for him with him for minutes in Chicago at that small forward position. So naturally, that opens up 35 minutes at small forward for the Chicago Bulls. Seldon and Brooks come over. I think Seldon's a better player than Brooks, and I think there's going to be a whole mess there. Now, Cameron Payne, RIP Cameron Payne, he is going to be waived after this deal. So he was playing some minutes at shooting guard. But what I think is going to happen, and reported by Malika Andrews of ESPN, is that Chandler Hutchison will move into that starting role. We've seen him start some games this season. They haven't really been pretty. They were games, though, that he started at power forward, so it is a little bit different for him. He put up good numbers at Boise State last season. Hasn't really been able to translate that stat-stuffing ability that he did have at Boise State last season, where he was able to be a solid ball handler off the wing, generate assists. That hasn't happened for him so far in the NBA. The 3 games he started this season, he's averaged 2 points and 4 rebounds in 23 minutes with 0.7 assists and shot 20% from the field. It's obviously a very small sample size, but they are horrible, horrible numbers for Chandler Hutchison. I don't see him as a 12-team ad, a 14-team ad. I think the minutes will be there, but he's just not going to get the shots with those guys, Dunn, Markin, and Levine, Portis, even Carter, getting significantly more opportunities than Hutchison. And then you get someone like Seldon and Brooks, Big Shaq Harrison, Ryan Archer, Jacono, Antonio Blakeney might get a shot. And Blakeney and Brooks are basically the same player. So if the Bulls are really steering into rebuild and younger guys, then you go with Blakeney because he's considerably younger than what Brooks is, and they do the same sort of thing. So if there's any of those guys that traded that are going to have any value, I think it's Seldon. I think he's the better player between him and Brooks. I think he's a better player than Archer, Jacono, and even Shaq Harrison. But he's not going to find himself, I don't think, in a role large enough to really have a huge impact in most fantasy leagues. The biggest boost is going to go to Hutchison. He's going to play a lot of minutes, but that doesn't necessarily, he's going to generate stats. But there is a little bit of hope we can hold out for Chandler, given that the fact he was able to distribute the ball quite well in Boise and put up some okay scoring, or really good scoring numbers, and shoot the ball well. That just hasn't translated across to the NBA at this point, and he's more of an 18-team, 20-team league, maybe 16-team league ad, but that'd be about it, while Seldon is the very, very deep league guy. Many questions people ask me, does this help Jabari Parker? No, I don't think they're going to start playing Jabari Parker now. I think they're trying to get Jabari out of there. The minutes that Holiday vacated will be filled by Hutchison and Seldon and Brooks and Archer Jacono and the other guy, I can't remember, Shaq Harrison and Blakeney, they'll fill those minutes. I don't think it's going to be Jabari there at all. Someone asked me if it helps Bobby Portis. I don't think it has any impact on Bobby Portis whatsoever. Yes, Hutchison was playing some power forward minutes, but when Portis came back, Hutchison wasn't going to be playing those power forward minutes. It was going to be exclusively Markkanen and Portis in that spot, and I think that that will remain the same there as well. So very little happens to those other Bulls guys, Dunleavy, Markkanen, Carter, Portis. They're all in that same sort of level. You're just going to have a step up from Hutchison and Seldon getting some extra playing time, maybe Antonio Blakeney. But all in all, there's no one to rush and go grab off 12-team waivers. In fact, what will probably happen is you'll find that Holiday is the guy that gets dropped, and for standard leagues, not a huge amount more happens with this deal that did get executed today by the Chicago Bulls and the Memphis Grizzlies. I think it's a fair deal for both teams. You know, I shit on the Bulls all the time, but I don't have any concerns at all. I think this is a fine deal. They got two draft picks. They got a young guy there in Seldon who's been shafted a little bit in Memphis. I think he can provide way more than what he did in Memphis. He could be an interesting player to watch, and if they start him and play 30 minutes a night, he's got a chance to be maybe a 14-team league guy. That would be one to watch there with Seldon. I think he's a little bit away from that, but I think he's probably got more that can be explored than what we saw from him in Memphis. So he's, I guess, a name to watch, probably the name I'd want to watch the most in Chicago, despite the fact that Hutchison will be that guy who is stepping into that starting lineup initially. So a trade goes down, Holiday's gone, the Bulls are going to be worse. He wasn't really, I don't think it's impacting a huge amount here, but the value that you were getting from him, I think that you are, and even if he does still remain a top 150 guy, he moves from being your 10th best guy to probably your 13th best guy. And when someone is your 13th best guy, you stream that spot, you use that to pick up hot free agents. And that is exactly what I think Holiday is becoming now. Again, even if he plays 30 minutes in Memphis, I don't think he's going to be able to remain a must roster player. You might have different thoughts with that, of course, but I don't, and that's the way I see it. And again, all the projections for that are updated over on Basketball Monster, so you can check out my thoughts. Of course, that will all adjust when we see these teams and these guys in action, and we see how this all goes down over the coming day. So trade going down, just to recap it, the Chicago Bulls send Justin Holiday to the Memphis Grizzlies. In exchange, they get Wayne Seldon, they get Marshawn Brooks, and they get 2 second round draft picks. That'll do it. See you guys. All right, let's indeed go on to this next segment of the show now. We look through the box scores. There were just the three games on, of course, as we all know, on a low-volume Thursday. The first one of those games was the Toronto Raptors and Kawhi Leonard returning back to San Antonio. The Spurs win 125-107. As for Kawhi, 21 points with 5 assists and 2 steals on 62% shooting.
I'm a fun guy.
Now, everyone's going to talk in this game. Well, actually, we'll get to that in a sec. All right, Kawhi, that was solid. Serge Ibaka. I was worried that Ibaka was washed before this season, and then he came out on fire. Since he returned from his knee injury, he looks like he's struggling again, and it's not quite red flashing sirens and panic stations and all that sort of stuff yet, but it's been a little bit troubling. He looks more like last season's Ibaka than this season's Ibaka. Pascal Siakam, 10 points, 6 rebounds, the 7 assists.
A surprise, to be sure. but a welcome one.
We're never going to be expecting that every night, but that's a nice little bonus. A steal and a block on 4 of 8 shooting, so a strong performance from Siakam. We talked about Norm Powell already. And Kyle Lowry was questionable for this game, so that means that Fred VanVleet's value is about to disappear. 12-5 for VanVleet in his 28 minutes, but when Lowry's back, his value disappears. Well, DeLon Wright, I like DeLon Wright quite a bit. He's a restricted free agent. He's going to be interesting. 15-4 with a 1-1 in 24 minutes, but as I said earlier, with Lowry returning, his role is going to change and his minutes are likely going to decrease. Dan Green, scoreless in 26 minutes. He is not a 12-team league guy. On to the Spurs. The first career triple-double for DeMar DeRozan. 21-14 with 11 assists and 2 steals. Excellent performance from DeMar, and I've seen it bandied about everywhere. Revenge game for DeMar. Of course he was going to go bigger to the revenge game. And that's fine, except it was also a revenge game for Kawhi Leonard, and he scored 21 points. It was a revenge game for Danny Green, who scored 0 points. It was a revenge game from Jakob Poeltl, who had 2 points. So if a revenge game strike rate means 25% hit, it's not a narrative that makes any sense. And you can say, oh, DeMar was so hurt by Toronto for getting traded, that's why he put up the numbers. And that is accurate. He was hurt by Toronto. But if you don't think that Kawhi Leonard had something to prove against the San Antonio Spurs or was 100% pissed off with that organization, because honestly, he wouldn't be playing for the Toronto Raptors if he didn't have a significant problem with the San Antonio Spurs organization, then you're kidding yourself. So either revenge game works or it doesn't, and you can't just pick it as, and you could have said, oh yeah, I knew it was going to happen, but you could have also said the same thing for Kawhi. You could have also applied it to any sort of situation that happens in any game, and again, the numbers and the statistics just don't back up that this is an actual observable phenomenon, because we always love to pick out the ones, or I don't, because I try not to, but people love to pick out the ones that work, like DeMar DeRozan revenge game, and then ignore the ones that don't, like Danny Green shitting all over himself. So you got to always weigh all those things up. But fantastic from DeMar. Fantastic from Bryn Forbes. Let's talk about my mate Derek White. Another big game. 19 points, 4 assists, 73% shooting. The shooting won't stick, but he didn't provide any defense in this one. Just one steal. But he is a must-add 12-team league guy. I've been saying it for a little bit of time now. You got to have him in 12-teamers. He's still available in 65% of leagues. Fingers out of assholes and go and grab him. You got to grab him. My thoughts anyway. Rudy Gay was back. He was doubtful. Then he was upgraded to be playing. 13-7-3 in 23 minutes. A strong performance. He's probably the 12-team league guy. With him back, we had Pau Gasol out of the rotation. I think Pau's going to really struggle to play this season with how well Jakob Poeltl has played in his stead. And Davis Bertans played 27 minutes. He and Marco Bellinelli are really just 3-point streamers and probably just as your 14-team league streamers. Also, congratulations to Lonnie Walker for making his NBA debut. 3 points in 5 minutes. I don't see him making any sort of a real impact this season. The Spurs' backcourt depth with Forbes, with White, with Mills, with Bellinelli, with DeRozan, and you might say that some of those guys struggle, and they do struggle at times, like Bellinelli and Mills, they've got their issues, and Walker's, I don't think, going to leap ahead of those guys in the rotation at any point this season. The next game we look at, the Denver Nuggets beat the Sacramento Kings on the road, 117-113, Nikola Jokic.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
26-13-6 with 3 triples, a steal and a block. Great percentages. He is rounding back into that first round guy, which is great to see. Well, Jamal Murray had 2 points at halftime. Thankfully, no one said to me, oh man, Murray sucks. I can't wait to get rid of him, trading him away. Because that's what happens sometimes when players have bad first halves. Murray went out and scored 34 points in the second half, had 6 triples, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists. He's dealing with 2 sprained ankles, I think a hip issue and a forearm issue. He is playing some unbelievable basketball. This is the most sell-high opportunity I think you're going to get with the Blue Arrow. Harris is going to round back into form, some more minutes for Paul Millsap, Isaiah Thomas. Maybe he comes back, I don't know. Will Barton will come back, and Murray might succumb to these injuries at some point. So this is a real sell-high opportunity for Jamal, in my opinion. If you can also sell high on Mason Plumlee, do it. 12-10 in 30 minutes with a steal and a block. He is likely going to lose this starting job to Paul Millsap pretty soon. Millsap played 22 minutes, 10-6. Although, I've got a weird feeling. I think Mike Malone might actually just keep it Millsap on the bench here because he loves Mason Plumlee. We know how much he loves Mason Plumlee. I reckon we might see a little bit more of this, and I wouldn't be shocked if maybe the next 3 or 4 weeks, and that might seem ridiculous, but if Millsap comes off the bench for that time, I wouldn't be stunned. Monty Morris, only 11 minutes. he's in a fair bit of trouble here in terms of value. Of course, you're dropping him in 12 team as well. Malik Beasley, who was on a real hot streak, only 7 points, but played 25 minutes. There just isn't enough minutes for these guys to have value. Same with Wancho, a clear 12 team drop there with just the 5 points in his 16 minutes. For the Kings, Budrick Hield had 29 with 5 triples. His season continues to be amazing. While De'Aaron Fox had 16, 2 and 8, 70% shooting, a good bounce back after last game. And Nemanja Bjelica started out red hot, cooled a bit, but 17, 6 and 3 with a block. Until Marvin Bagley returns, he's got this 12 team league value, and he puts together value in blocks. He has like 5-6 games in a row that are good, 5 or 6 shit ones, and then 5 or 6 in a row. So you add him, and then when it falls off and when Bagley comes, you move on. Bogdanović, 14 and 5 in his 29 minutes. Well, Cauley Stein, the man just refuses to block shots. 13 and 6 in 30 minutes. It's always going to put a real capper on his value. He's not losing minutes, I don't think, this season, but never going to be a high-end player. While, interestingly, Harry Giles was ahead of Kostakoufos in the rotations. 19 minutes for Giles, 6, 5 and 3. He's really just going to be a deeper league guy, but I could see him pushing into an every-night guy where he'd just been a sporadic player before this, but it is definitely trending in his direction. The last game was the Warriors and their overtime loss to the Rockets, 135-134. Clint Capela was a beast, 46 minutes, 29 and 21 with 2 steals and a block. I talked about this yesterday, how he fits against the Warriors really well. I wasn't expecting this, and Nene did not even play in this game. That's how much they just relied heavily on Capela. Austin Rivers played 44 minutes and had 18 points, 4 threes and 4 assists, and that's valuable. That can be a 12-team stream guy, but of course, Ennis played only 8 minutes, Eric Gordon was out, Chris Paul is out. As soon as one of those guys comes back, meaning Gordon or Paul, Rivers' value disappears out of 12-teamers, and now he's just a real back-end, short-term league type of guy. Gerald Green also had 16 points in 30 minutes with 3 triples, but he's just an emergency deep league guy who is really just filling in for these other players. Jimmy Ennis, just 3 points in 8 minutes. As I said earlier, I wouldn't be shocked if they do keep House in that lineup ahead of him. Wouldn't be stunned with that at all. Klay Thompson brought the defense, 26 points as well, 55% shooting, 3 steals, 2 blocks and 4 assists, one of his better games for the season. The shooting is always going to turn around. He was never going to remain that bad, but those added extras are a real bonus. Draymond almost the triple-double, 9, 11 and 8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, always tends to do well against Houston and did it here, while Steph had 35 and 6 and Durant had 26 and 7. One of Kevon Looney's better games, 12 and 7 with a steal and a block, but he's got a clear expiry date on any sort of value he's got, and that's the return of DeMarcus Cousins, which could come at any point in the next couple of weeks. Looney's just a streamer, a 16-team, 14-team league. I'm probably more 16-team league player, and that value will dip when Boog returns. Well, Iguodala played 34 minutes and had 5, 6, and 4. Very little to see with him. Him and Livingston, they're struggling at the moment. And that's going to be the downfall, I think, of the Warriors at some point, is that bench of Iguodala, Livingston, who carried them so many times. They're just not able to do that anymore because those guys are well past, not in their prime, but past their post-prime as well. And that's going to be a concern come playoffs, of course. If DeMarcus Cousins come back healthy, then it's a nice problem to have that your eighth man is not the same guy that he used to be. But not much else to really talk about with this Warriors team from a fantasy point of view. All right, let us roll back in here and now talk some DFS for Friday. But we'll start, of course, with the perfect lineups on DraftKings. Harden, Jamal Murray, Norm Powell, Daniel House, Clint Capela, DeLon Wright, DeMar DeRozan, and Klay Thompson. That totaled $405.5 for the full $50,000. And on FanDuel, it was Brinny Forbes, the Blue Arrow, Jim Harden, Klay Thompson, Norm Powell, Gerald Green, Harry Giles, Draymond Green, Clint Capela for a total of $397.8, and that cost $59,500. Dollar it is. All right, let's get into these games for DFS for Friday's action. It's a big 10-game slate across the NBA. We're going to be focusing more on FanDuel pricing for today. The first game we look at, the Utah Jazz and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Jazz are significant favorites, 8.5-point favorites here. The total, 208.5. You worry about the minutes for Nance. There is some whispers that the Cavs could look to start Nance and Thompson together to match up against the big front court of Favors and Gobert. But again, that seems to go counterintuitive to what Larry Drew seems to like, because he thinks that Drew thinks that Nance can't match up against big players, and that's why he put him on the bench against Hassan Whiteside. So I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. Yeah, Thompson is going to start at center. There's no doubt about that. Whether Nance starts at power forward or not remains to be seen. And his minutes, they are going to be a real concern and something for us to pay attention to. Ante Zizic is out of this one, so maybe that keeps Nance in that backup role because there is no other center unless they're going to put out Channing Frye. David Nwaba also out for the Cavs. This one, Ricky Rubio is questionable for Utah, while Matty Dellavedova is questionable for Cleveland. If Dally is out, that's more minutes for Clarkson, it's more minutes for McCaw, it's more minutes for Burks. While if Rubio is out, Dante Exum becomes the strong play there. At point guard on FanDuel, Colin Sexton, the Padawan, is 5,400. He has significantly been underperforming that number with just a 22.5-point average over the last five. I think his value gets somewhat of a boost if Dellavedova is out, but against this Jazz team who defends point guards quite well and plays at a slow pace, I'm not sure that he is the best option at that salary, while Rubio at $7,000. It is a great matchup for Rubio. Point guards have really, really dominated against Cleveland over the course of the last few weeks. The $7,000 probably feels a little bit high for a guy who is dealing with an injury of his own with that foot soreness. As I mentioned, Exum at $3,900 will become a very, very chalky cash play and someone that it would be pretty hard to avoid having exposure to. At shooting guard, Don Mitchell's at $7,400. Hasn't quite been at that level, has done well against Cleveland in the past, and it is a positive matchup. I'd be happy to go with him here, especially if Rubio is sidelined, while Jordy Clarkson at $5,200. The only way I'd use Clarkson here is if Dellavedova is out. We saw Clarkson's minutes reduced last game with Rocket Rodney Hood back in the mix, and Alec Burks against his former team at $4,500. He'd come into play if Dellavedova was sidelined as well. McCaw, Kyle Korver, I don't really see the value there. Jingling Joe Ingles is down to $5,800. He has been struggling. It is a very, very positive matchup for Ingles. I like him more for tournaments given the inconsistency in what he's been doing. While Hood and Osman both come in as small forward guys, I like Hood at $4,000. That's a very, very attractive price for Hoodie. He had 25 points in that return game last time out, and I think that at $4,000 it's worth looking at. Small forwards do get butchered quite a bit against Utah, and the slow pace is an impact, and he is inconsistent, so GPP is probably the way to go there. Jay Crowder against his former teams at $4,800. He's coming off a big one, 36 points last time out. He is, as we know, very, very inconsistent, and that would just be for tournaments. Nance has dropped down to $6,700 on FanDuel. That's a $700 price drop. It's a good matchup for him, and if they do start him at power forward, I could see some value there, but I have a lot of hesitancy in recommending him, and it'd probably be one that I'd want to stay away from. Favors at $6,500 also seems a bit too highly priced, and then at center, you got Tristan Thompson, who's at $6,000, and Rudy Gobert at $8,800. I like both of them, sort of, but not enough at their current salaries to consider them really strong options. On DraftKings, Ingles again, $5,300 looks good. I like the Padawan at $4,800 for Colin Sexton. That's not a bad price for him. Larry Nance at $6,300 still comes with those same level of concerns. And Don Mitchell at $7,200 is an interesting tournament guy over on DraftKings. Next up, we go to the Washington Wizards and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 7. The total is 214.5. We know about the Miami Heat's packed rotation. Dwayne Wade is questionable, though, so if he is out, it opens up minutes for Derek Jones Jr., as we saw last game. But if Wade plays, who's going to miss out? Is it going to be Jones? Is it going to be Waiters? Is it going to be Magruder? Is it going to be Tyler Johnson? Somebody's going to have to lose a significant amount of minutes in this Heat rotation. At point guard, Satoransky's at $6,400. He had 43 points against the Atlanta Hawks. That's a pretty hefty price tag for Satoransky, and I think it's taking a lot of value off the table by considering him a must-roster guy, which, of course, I don't consider him a must-roster guy at that sort of a salary, while Tyler Johnson at $4,900. 33 last game was strong. I would use him if Wade is out. If Wade is in, it's a little bit tough. Dwayne himself at $5,100. He's been exceeding that relatively consistently, and it is a positive matchup. If he's fine from his illness, I think the $5,100 is worth looking at. I'd probably steer just away in case he's still dealing with some residual effects. Brad Beal's at $9,700. He's almost a lock for 40 points, it feels like, at the moment, which is not a bad floor. The Heat do guard opposition guards pretty well, shooting guards in particular, and that is a hefty price you're paying for Brad Beal, but I feel okay with using him given the matchup and the other guys available. Waiters, I don't think we can go that way. At small forward, Justice Winslow's at $7,000. He's always a risky play because when he shoots poorly, his minutes get reduced. He's at 7,000. So if he shoots well, then he'll exceed that number really comfortably. If he doesn't shoot well, then he might get 25 points. So that makes him a tournament guy, and that's it. While Joshy Richardson, much more safer floor. He's at 7,200. I like the fact that the salary's come down by $500 for Josh Richardson here. So he is someone to have a look at that sort of a salary. And I feel okay with him. Trevor Ariza at 63, probably too high. Otto Porter still returning from injury. He's dropped all the way down to 4,900 because he's likely to be on a minutes limit again. So that's a fade. Well, Jeff Green at 58.
My name is Jeff.
Obviously exceeded that last game with 37 points, but it's all going to come down to playing time. We know Markieff Morris is out for the next 6 weeks, so that does help Green. I don't dislike him there. I think there's something to see, but not a must-roster guy. Well, Derek Jones at 39, there's a ton of value potentially there. 32 points in the Heat's last game, but where are the minutes coming from? How is he going to get those 31 minutes again if Dwayne Wade plays? That is the giant question that needs to be asked, and if Wade is out, then of course Jones becomes an option. At power forward, Adebayo's at 4,400. I don't really trust that. Olynyk at 4,000. Don't trust that. James Johnson at 5,000. Also don't trust that. I just don't know how these minutes are going to be apportioned, and it could change at any point during this game. Hassan Whiteside's down all the way to $7,000. A great matchup for him, I believe, against Thomas Bryant. We'll see how that actually works there with him, but I think he's a great GPP upside guy. As for Bryant, he is up to 6,900.
Giggity!
He's coming off some big games. 47 points last time out, averaging over 40 the last three. Big minutes as long as Markieff Morris is out, and Markieff Morris is out. So at 6,900, I actually do like Thomas Bryant here. On DraftKings, I like James Johnson a lot more there because he is at 3,900. It's almost impossible for him to not make value at that salary. Tom Bryant at 6,000 is strong. Ariza at 58 is in a better spot. Beal is good. And Whiteside at 6,800 has a lot of appeal. I also like Wade at 4,600 if he is ruled ready to go. And the other same sort of value descriptions apply to most of those guys as it did on FanDuel. The next game up is the Orlando Magic traveling to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves are 6-point favorites. The total is 212. The Wolves are dealing with their injury concerns. Bob Covington is out. Derrick Rose is doubtful, while Jeff Teague...
My name is Jeff.
He is questionable, of course. If Teague is out, then we're looking at a lot of Tyus Jones here. If Teague is in, it puts a bit of the cramp on the Jones's value. There's going to be some wing minutes there. Josh Okogie is going to have to step up. We saw Anthony Tolliver get a larger run last game as well. At point guard, DJ Augustin, 4,900, just eased himself back in that game against the Bulls. 23 points in 25 minutes. I think he's worth a look here, although point guards have struggled this season against the Timberwolves. That is worth bearing in mind, but it's a nice price for Deej. While 66 for Jeff Teague, potentially returning from injury, I'd fade that. The 65 for Tyus Jones, it's a strong fade as long as Teague plays. If Teague is out, then it's a pretty strong play, to be honest. At shooting guard, Okogie's at 3,800. I imagine he gets 30 minutes or so here. Only 24 last game for 15 points, but he can be a 25 to 26 point guy. I think there's a ton of value, but I'm not locked in for cash. While Wiggins at 65, he really brought it last game. 37 points. If Teague is out, I'm big on Wiggins here. While Fournier at 53... I just don't see the excitement. I don't see the upside. I don't see a strong enough floor. Same with Terry Ross. That's small forward. Johnny Isaac, probably not. Johnny Simmons, definitely not. Where's Awundo? Of course not. At power forward, Taj Gibson and Dario Saric. 3,600 for Saric is really, really cheap, but he's just not doing enough. And Gibson at 4,600 is okay, but again, not doing enough. I have no faith in either of those guys, nor do I have faith in Tom Thibodeau's rotation with those players. Aaron Gordon dropped 42 against the Bulls because they're terrible. He's at 7,600. It's a negative matchup for Gordo, and prior to that Bulls game, he'd really been struggling. So I think 7,600 is probably a little bit pricey. And then you got Towns v. Vucevic. 10,600 for Townsy, 9,800 for Vuce. Both of these guys are on a roll. Towns is averaging 71 points on FanDuel the last three games. It's a positive matchup for him. I'm in on using him. As for Vuce at 9,800, that's pretty expensive, but he is averaging 50 points a game over the last five, which would give you close to that, well, pretty much right at that value. I think I would end up fading Vuce, and I would happily use Towns at their respective salaries. Over on DraftKings, Augustin and Towns come in really strong. Terry Ross is an interesting GPP guy, as is Okogie at 3,900. Vuce at 93 is a little bit more favorable on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel, but not considerably. The next game that we take a look at, we've got the Indiana Pacers traveling to take on the Chicago Bulls. The Pacers are 6-point favorites. The total is 203. The Pacers big men get a real gift here, assuming Miles Turner plays. He's questionable with a broken nose. PunchBob Shiplock, Bobby Portis, has been upgraded to doubtful for the Chicago Bulls. Of course, Justin Holiday won't be there. I don't expect Wayne Seldon to play. Marshawn Brooks won't be with the team ever. So there's going to be some minutes available there on the wing for the Bulls, and they're going to be starting Chandler Hutchison in that small forward position. Doug McDermott also probable with an ankle injury, and Aaron Holiday questionable with an illness. Big Shaq Harrison.
Big Shaq.
He's at 3,800. Some minutes are going to be appearing on the wing there. He played an inexplicable 26 minutes last game for 25 points. And at 3,800, that's interesting. His ability to generate steals makes him maybe a GPP guy. I like Chris Dunn a lot here. 7,200, strong floor, decent upside. Yeah, no Justin Holiday and a $600 price drop. Really, everything adds up to Chris Dunn being a fairly strong option here. Corey Joseph, Daz Collison. Yeah, Collison at 5,900 has been giving you that value. I'm not 100% certain I trust it, though. At shooting guard, Antonio Blakeney is a minimum salary player. He is going to get an opportunity to fill some of those Holiday minutes before Seldon arrives. At least at minimum salary, he can do absolutely nothing, or he could have a 26-point game, which is something that he has done in the past this season. He's already had one of those. Only for tournaments, really, for Blakeney. As for Levine, an $800 price drop, that is a massive tumble for Zach. Now, he's averaging just 27 over the last five, so reasonable to drop him down that much. And the defensive matchup here against Oladipo and the Pacers is not favorable. If you're going to use Zach, it's more for GPPs, while Oladipo has dropped down to 8,800. He had 48 points last game, so an interesting time to drop him down. The Bulls do defend his position relatively well, and his shooting and production hasn't been consistent, so I'm not super interested in Oladipo here, especially with a potential blowout. Chandler Hutchison hasn't done anything this season, but a starter who could play 35 minutes at 3,500 minimum salary, who has had a 25-point game this season, it has to at least draw some level of attention. I wouldn't say he's locked in for cash, but he's pretty good at for it, and he's absolutely a tournament guy. Anytime you can get a starter on a depleted roster who could play 35 minutes, you have to really consider it. Tyreek's at 46, and I won't be considering that, while Bojan Bogdanovic is a little bit too highly priced at 5,500 in my mind. At power forward, Lauri Markkanen at 7,300 has been underperforming that number, no doubt about it, but power forwards have had a pretty good run against the Pacers this season, so I'd be okay with going with Lowry. While Sabonis at 7,000, that becomes an absolute must roster. If Turner is out, not only does he get the extra minutes, but he gets to go against the Bulls. So he's one to watch. And then you go to Wendell Carter Jr. at 5,900. He had a robust 0.2 points last game. Absolutely atrocious. But before that, he was putting up good numbers. But it's a tough matchup for Carter. You'd have to be pretty ballsy to lock him into lineups. Well, Thad Young's at 59, and I don't really feel too much there. Miles Turner at center, $8,000. It's a good matchup. It's a high price for a guy who might be adjusting to play in a mask, but he could be a GPP guy, just given how positive this matchup actually is for Turner, or for big men who do go up against the Bulls. Also news that Rolly Elkins will be called up for Chicago to help fill in some of that guard depth with those traded players not arriving yet. Not sure that they're going to have really too much of an impact, or will Elkins have too much of an impact in this game, I would have to say. Most likely not. Let's go on to the DraftKings side of things. Hutchison, Markkanen, Levine, they're all pretty strong cashy options. Blakeney's an interesting GPP guy, and Wendell Carter the same. I like Chris Dunn quite a bit at 6,100 there as well. So he is absolutely someone that you can pay some level of attention to, especially over on DraftKings. Alright, let's move on to the next game. We have got, who is up next? It is the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics. No spread or total for this one. Kyrie is out. I imagine that will have somewhat of an impact on that spread, and that's why it isn't out just at this point. Let's have a look over on the old FanDuel for this matchup here. So Terry Rozier gets another start. He is all the way up to 6,100. He had 43 points in that first game without Kyrie against the Timberwolves. I think he's probably a good play at 6,100. Everybody will be on him, but that salary is quite restrictive. I like Dennis Smith, though. 5,400. Now, it's a tough matchup for Smitty. The Boston defense is quite strong. But I do like what Smith has been doing. Dropped 36 against the Hornets in only 22 minutes. Barea, probably don't see much there. I like Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown quite a bit. 4,800 for Smart, 4,500 for Jaylen. This is with Marcus Morris questionable as well, so more minutes could be going towards both of these guys. I feel like Smart is a decent cash play. Jaylen more of a tournament guy, but both should be in the mix. Wes Matthews not feeling too much there. And then you got Doncic at 7,800. I think that might be a little bit overpriced in what looks to be quite a difficult matchup going up against the Boston Celtics. We know how much that they pretty much limit every position that they do go up and play against. That small forward, Gordy Hayward at 5,700, dropped 42 last game without Kyrie. We saw the confidence back, we saw the minutes up, we saw the usage up more importantly. So I'm banking on that happening again at 5,700, and I think that he is worth going. That could really, really burn me, but I think he's worth looking at. While the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 5,900. I think that Barnes can give you 30 points. I'm not sure he can go too much above that, but I feel pretty confident in what his floor is. And what his floor is. So I think that Barnes is worth a look. For the Celtics, if Marcus Morris is out, you're going to get more Gershon Yabesele. You're going to get more Semi Ojeleye there as well. They're not really big influences in the DFS space, but you'll get some more minutes for Jayce Tatum, and that then pushes minutes more to Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart as well. 5,400 for Morris with that sore neck. I actually don't anticipate him playing in this game. While Tatum at 61 on a little bit of a downturn, I think this could be an opportunity for him if Morris sits. For the centers, DeAndre Jordan, 6,800, has done well against the Celtics in the past, despite Al Horford being a very good defender. Jordan averages 42 the last three times out. That was as a member of the Clippers. He'd only be tournaments here, while Horford recovering from his knee issue at $6,000. He actually broke that value last game, had 32 points in 23 minutes. I don't put full confidence in him because I don't know that he is back to full rotation minutes just yet. On DraftKings, I like Smart. I like Hayward quite a bit. Wes Matthews is more appealing on DraftKings at 42. DeAndre has some value there, and Smith at 49 also looks pretty good. Rozier at 61 is way less appealing on DraftKings at FanDuel just because of the lower salary cap, and he is priced the same as what he is over on FanDuel. All right, let's go into the next game here. All right, let's look at the other side of that trade as the Brooklyn Nets take on the Memphis Grizzlies. He had no spread available for this one at the moment. Justin Holiday is unlikely to play in this game. Mike Conley is listed as questionable with that shoulder issue, which plagued him last game as well. For the Nets, no lingering injury concerns that we don't already know about, like Alan Crabb, of course. At point guard, I like Shabazz Napier quite a bit here. 3,600. The minutes have been up lately. That's almost a minimum salary for Shabazz, and he can get you 20 points, which I think he can with the way that the minutes have been shaking out at the moment. No Rondé, no Crabb. That is pushing more minutes to Shabazz, and I think that that's a worthy option on FanDuel with that lower score drop thing. If he can get you 22 or 23 points, that might actually help you out there. Mike Conley's at 84 with that shoulder. I would fade that really strongly. If he is out, it's going to be Shelvin Mack and Javon Carter. I'd probably throw Carter into a GPP. I just think he's a more talented player than what Mack is. Mack can have value. He is at 3,600, so he could very easily exceed 20. I think that Mack would be more of a cash guy and Carter would be more of a tournament player. At shooting guard, you've got to replace Wayne Seldon's minutes, but remember, Seldon was playing like 6 minutes a game, so those minutes go to Dylan Brooks here, 3,700. We know he can score in a bunch. That's almost minimum salary. That makes him a GPP option. Or D'Angelo Russell dropped a massive 56 points last game. He is a little bit up and down, a bit hit and miss. 7,700, he can easily smash through that. He's had a 60-point game already this season, but he could also have a 25-pointer, so that makes him a pretty decent GPP guy. That's about it. Didn't touch on Spencer Dinwiddie. He is in a bit of a downturn at the moment, and I think he's too expensive. Garrett Temple at 3,900. Played a lot of minutes last game. He's probably going to have to do it again, but that could be the last time he has to play a lot of minutes with Holiday on the way in. 3,900 for Garrett Temple there, and also punched on with Omri Caspi in the locker room. Don't really see too much interest there. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 6,200. That feels a little bit too high for Anderson. While Smoke and Joe Harris at 4,900. Strong game from him last time out, 26 points. He is a little fluky in terms of how the production can come. I'm not super into him. Damari Carroll's putting up good numbers, averaging 30 over the last three, and at 5,500, there is something there. I just have my concerns. At power forward, Jaren Jackson Jr., 6,300. Last time out against the Nets, he dropped 48. He had 39 in his last game. 6,300 is a good price, assuming he stays on the court. And there's a genuine risk with that, with coaching, and of course with his inability to stay out of foul trouble. So that is a concern with Jackson, but it's a great GPP option. Rowdy Roddy and Kurucs at 4,500 is an interesting GPP guy here as well. His production has waned pretty considerably, and it would only be for tournaments that I'd look at him. While Jermichael Green, I just don't see it at 4,600. For the centres, Marc Gasol's at 8,400. Centres against the Nets have had a real feast this season. So at that sort of price, I think you got to look at him pretty closely. Probably look more for tournaments, but again, this matchup is strong for him. He's averaging over 40 the last five games. I do like Gasol quite a bit. Jarrett Allen's at 6,000. It's not a great matchup for him. Centers have struggled against the Grizz this season, and I think I'd probably end up fading Jarrett here. Over on DraftKings, Napier's still an option there, 36. Gasol at 81 looks pretty strong. Kyle Anderson much better there at 5,200. Triple J at 56 looks really, really good also. And then you got that 3,600 upside play of Dylan Brooks if he gets some of those extra minutes from the Seldon deal. All right, let's go on to the next game now. We're looking at the Atlanta Hawks and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 13. It's a total of 230.5. It's a huge blowout risk. It's also Mike Budenholzer going up against his former team here as well. So that is maybe something you could bake into it, but I'm more looking at this as a real blowout risk, and that's going to put some of the values from some of these guys in some jeopardy. Injury-wise, Ersan Ilyasova isn't listed on the injury report, so that could be the end of DJ Wilson. Sterling Brown also listed as probable with an ankle injury. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe's at 7,200. In fact, most of these Bucks guys are going to be fade guys just because of the blowout risk. 7,200 is a fair-ish price for Bledsoe, but you just run the risk of the minutes being limited. Georgie Hill at 3,800, I don't see any excitement there. Trae Young at 66, he's been shooting a little bit better, but that is too high of a price against this team. And Jeremy Lin, Lin's probably the only one I consider for tournaments at 46. He could easily have a 28 or 29 pointer, but again, not a strong option. At shooting guard, Kevin Huerter at $5,000, just a shit ton of minutes. The production hasn't quite been there for Huerter, but I really do like him, and I think there's an option here to use him. While 5,700 for Malcolm Brogdon is probably the most usable of the majority of the Bucks' main guys. 74 for Chris Middleton looks okay as well, but again, the blowout risk is pretty significant. Let's look at some small forwards. Bembry at 5,400, I don't mind that, but it's also not super great. While Yanni Antetokounmpo, there is almost no way I'd want to use Antetokounmpo at 12,500. We know he's good, we know he'll annihilate the Hawks, but they could be up 20 points in the third quarter and Giannis could play 27 minutes. Budenholzer's got absolutely no problem in sitting his guys down when games are out of hand. He's not an insane man like Tom Thibodeau. For the power forwards, Johnny Collins, the Baptist at 8,300. That is just too high of a price. I love what Collins is doing. He's getting me 35 a night, but 8,300, I need more than that. So I don't really like him there. And at center, Brook Lopez at 5,600. Brook is just on a mission at the moment, and his minutes are probably the least likely to be limited. I actually don't mind that at 5,600 at all. While the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at 5,500, dropping by $1,000 from last time, that's encouraging. And I'd actually be happy to go back and use Dedman here. While Alex Len, who is on fire, is up to 5,800, and I think that takes a lot of the value out of using Len if he is up to 5,800. There's just no consistency or no ability to rely upon him at that sort of a salary. On DraftKings, still a bunch of guys that, where is my DraftKings thing? Yeah, look, Bembry, I think, is more valuable on DraftKings. Trae Young comes in a bit better. The Baptist at 75 looks pretty good. You could take a massive flyer on Daniel Hamilton at 3,400, who probably starts again for Kent Bazemore. Huerter at 46 looks all right. And most of those Bucks guys are fades, as we discussed. Next up, we've got the LA Clippers taking on the Phoenix Suns. The Clippers are 4-point favorites. The total is 233. That's a pretty big total, the biggest total of the day. Injury-wise, nothing to really write home about here. DeAnthony Melton at 45. He's giving you about 24 a night at the moment, which is really, really strong at that salary. And I think he's going to push into high 20s in minutes. I like Melton here quite a bit. Pat Beverley at 38, Gilgeous Alexander at 44. Gilgeous Alexander dropped 33 on the Suns earlier this season. So he is interesting, but we've seen Doc Rivers really limit his playing time of late. It would only be tournaments I look at Shea, but he's a little bit more in play here than what he's been in the past. Booker's at 8,800. That is expensive, obviously, but Booker's a 45-point type of a guy here. No reason that you wouldn't want to consider him. Lou Williams at 6,800. The only reason I wouldn't look at Lou here, in case the Clippers blow this out, but the Suns have been more competitive lately. Williams is on a real hot streak, averaging 38 over the last five. Not super sold on him here, though. At small forward, Oubre's at 3,800. He is doing a big pile of nothing at the moment. Still, 3,800 for a 26-minute-a-game guy in a positive matchup is GPP worthy. That's it. While McCall Bridges is only for GPPs, he's at 42. Tony Warren Jr.'s at 62. A disappointing game last time out. I feel like he's good for 30. In a positive matchup, I'd be happy to go back and roll with Warren. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, is up to 7,300. Well, he's giving you that value pretty much every night. So I think that he is a relatively strong play here. At power forward, I don't want Rashawn Holmes. Joshy Jackson exceeded value significantly last game at 4,100. He dropped 33 points. I don't want to put any trust in him. The table, Montrezl Harrell at 7,400. This is a pretty good matchup for Harrell, I think. I would happily go with him in cash. Not sure there's enough tournament upside, though, in him. And Toby Harris at 74, also a relatively good cash play. Ayton's been killing it. He's at $8,000. I love this matchup for Ayton. I'd be happy to use him here against Boban or Gortat. And as for Boban or Gortat, I don't know which one of those guys is going to start. But regardless of who it is, I'm not interested in using either of them. On DraftKings, Melton comes in strong at 37. Ayton at 78 is good as well. McCall at 4,000 has a little bit of value. Booker at 9,000 is not as favorable as he is on FanDuel, but still okay. And Warren at 62, also a little bit less value on DraftKings than what would come in over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Knicks and the Lakers. No spread or total here. LeBron is ruled out of this game, and the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, is questionable, while Mitchell Robinson on the Knicks side has been upgraded to questionable. So we'll get to see exactly what does happen with that center rotation if he is cleared to play. At point guard, Lonzo Ball's at 6,800. He does really well against the Knicks historically, 44-point average against them. He's going to get minutes, no doubt. I think at 6,800, he's more of a GPP guy, though. He's got 60-point upside. I wouldn't trust him in cash just yet. While Manny Moutier, 5,900, had 37 last game. He is a little bit hit and miss, but his game suits DFS more than it suits, say, category leagues. And I think 5,900 is a solid price tag. At shooting guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is on fire at 4,500. If Kuzma and is out in addition to LeBron, then I think 4,500 for KCP is strong. He's going to have to take a lot of shots, and he becomes a great option. While Timmy Hardaway at 61, there are better options out there. Trier is not one of those better options, nor is Dotson, but Josh the Hitman Hart at 6,400, that is very aggressively highly priced, but he is averaging over 30 points the last five, over 36 the last three, and again, if Kuzma is out, he's going to have to take on a larger load, and that would give Hart at 6,400 some value. At small forward, Lance Stephenson's at 3,700, I think this is a prime opportunity for Lance. If Kuzma is out, to really step up and have a 25, a 30-point game, I like him here. Ingram at 6,900.
Giggity!
I think at that salary, he is definitely a usable guy for cash and for tournaments, and is a brilliant matchup for him. While Kuzma at 6,900,
giggity!
If he plays, I love it, but dealing with that back injury is a real issue. The Fort, Kevin Knox at 5,800, we know how poor he is in category leagues, but he can accumulate DFS numbers, had 27 last game. I think he's a relatively okay cash guy. And Noah Vonleh at 63. Vonleh's lowest score in his last five is 28. That is an insanely high floor. The matchup is okay, and I feel pretty good about Vonleh here. For the centers, Zubats, Chandler, Kanter, Robinson, hard to really fully lock in on any of those guys. I don't know how Kanter and Robinson are going to be used. I need to talk about someone else as well. Luke Kornet, the Kornetto, 5,500, up by $1,700. That's a big price jump. He is averaging over 30, but with the potential return of Robinson, that could really steer pretty comfortably into fade territory for Kornet, just as we don't know. Unless we hear more information and Fizdale comes out and says, well, Robinson won't play or Kanter will be out of the rotation, it's going to be a little bit hard to expect 30-plus minutes for Kornet if two other centers are involved there in Robinson and Kanter. On DraftKings, I like JaVale. I like Lance quite a bit. Ingram, Kuzma, they come in pretty strong. KCP also at 4,900 looks pretty good over on DraftKings. Let's go through to the last game of the night, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Portland Trailblazers. The spread is even. The total is 224.5. We know that Yusuf Nurkic is on fire at the moment. Alex Abrines has been ruled out for the Oklahoma City Thunder. At point guard, Lillard's at 8,800. Point guards really struggle against the Thunder, so that's something to bear in mind. I think Lillard has been a little bit underperforming of late. Not someone I'm really ready to get into here. While 11,600 for Russell Westbrook, can't shoot for shit, but I think you feel pretty comfortable of getting 50-plus points for Westbrook, and that at 11,600, when you're not going to want to spend up for someone like Antetokounmpo, is probably worth looking at for Westbrook. Seth Curry on a little bit of a hot streak at the moment. He is an interesting GPP guy, but that's about it. And then at shooting guard, I like Dennis Schroeder here, 5,300. Noah Brines, an opportunity against a poorish defensive backcourt, gives him an option, while CJ McCollum at 6,400. Historically has been really good against Oklahoma City. Recent times against other opposition, he's struggling, but that gives him some GPP ability there. Small forwards, Mo Harkless at 49. He's averaging 33 over the last three. I don't put my full trust in Harkless, especially in cash, and especially with a price rise of $700. But that defensive upside on FanDuel with the bonus points for those defensive stats does give him that 35-point upside, which is okay. Well, it's pretty bloody good, actually. At 4,900, Paulie George absolutely dominating. 10,200 for Georgie. I like that for cash quite a bit. For the power forwards, you've got Jeremy Grant at 5,600. I don't see the interest in cash or in tournaments. The chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's at 5,700. Actually, a pretty decent floor for him over the last week or so. 24-point minimum in his last five games. At 5,700, he would be a GPP interesting player. For cash, you got to have pretty big balls to get Aminu out there. And at center, Steven Adams at 7,100. I like what Adams is doing. It's a positive matchup. I'd happily use him. And Nurkic is now up to 9,100. Fair enough, because he dropped 88 last game. I don't think against Adams that I want to go back and rely upon Nurkic to have another 50-point game. I think that puts him into fade territory here. Over on DraftKings, I like George, I like Lillard, I like Westbrook. Schroeder's got some value there. Harkless at 42 also comes in pretty good. And I like the 8,000 for Yusuf Nurkic on DraftKings. Considerably better than I do on FanDuel. Let's go through some studs and values. On DraftKings, my stud is Towns and my value play is Chandler Hutchison of the Bulls. My stud on FanDuel is Towns and my value play is Shabazz Napier. On Yahoo, my stud is Towns and my value is Kevin Huerter. And my Draft Stars stud is Brad Beal, and my value play is Josh Okogie. That'll do it for another week of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Subscribe to this podcast and leave a 5-star review. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, and make sure you hit that subscribe button. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Spencer Dinwiddie.